Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. President Trump, not happy, not thrilled, but the question is, will he sign that border security deal if it gets to his desk?
I can't say I'm happy. I can't say I'm thrilled. But the wall's getting built. Regardless, doesn't matter, because we're doing other things beyond what we're talking about here.
And Trump went on. This was rather interesting. He had some data points from DHS Secretary Christian Nielsen about violent crime committed by people in this country illegally. Remember the mantra of this show: small percentage of a big number is a big problem. So the small percentage of violent criminals that come into this country illegally, how big a problem are they?
The Democrats want everybody to be able to come into our country. We have many criminals. When you look at the numbers of criminals that are nabbed, I mean, I'm looking at numbers that are incredible. This card was just given to me by Secretary Nielsen. And assaults, 99,000 assaults. Larceny, 40,000. Burglary, 25,000. Fraudulent activities, 25,000. Damage and stolen property, 17,000. Sex offenses, 13,552. Sexual assaults, 10,468. That's sexual assaults on people that live in our country, by people that are coming illegally across our borders. In many cases, people that have come before I became president. What happens is we are working very hard. We're getting rid of tremendous numbers of MS-13. And the Democrats don't like us to get rid of MS-13. Now, you figure that one out. These are violent people, and they don't like us to get rid of MS-13. So, robberies, 11,177. Kidnappings, 4,112. Murders, 3,914. Okay? So these are people that ICE is dealing with, and nobody can deal with them more effectively. There's probably no group in this country that does so much, and it's really so little respect or love as ICE. It's really a terrible thing. They're doing an incredible job.
So he's done a good job of personifying the data through angel moms and dads, families who've been victimized by a person here illegally. But the data should really be jarring to you. I mean, we've talked about it before. Go back 4 or 5 years, the exchange between Ted Cruz and the President Obama's ICE director, Sarah Saldana, same data. And it's year after year after year, thus the need for border security, thus the humanitarian crisis on both sides of the border, I would argue.
Well, and so, yeah, but that's why people are mad. After all of this, all we're getting is 55 miles of a wall that he promised Mexico would pay for in the first place. I mean, Sean Hannity, Ann Coulter, they're not happy.
I'm getting details. $1.3 billion?
That was from yesterday.
The so-called compromise is typical of the D.C. sewer and swamp, and its level of funding for security and safety of the American people is pathetic. The president would need to declare a national emergency. This is the time. That is a necessity. And the president, I think I know him pretty well, telegraphed that very thing just today.
Oh, Hannity thinks he's telegraphing a declaration of a national emergency. Well, I don't know. I mean, you could read his recitation of the data a couple of different ways. You could read it and his, I'm not happy, I'm not thrilled, but I'm going to do it because here's what I'm dealing with Democrats. Democrats won't even go so far as to try to expel people in this country who are committing violent crimes. And let me just tell you the order of magnitude. You could read it. That's the predicate to say, I got to take what I can get with the Democrats. Or you can read it to say, yeah, what I'm being offered isn't enough and I'm going to come over the top. But again, with all due respect to Hannity, coming over the top only lands you in federal court.
Ann Coulter tweeting, Trump talks a good game on the border wall, but it's clearly, increasingly clear, he's afraid to fight for it. Call this the Yellow New Deal.
Yeah.
Trump, you know, but the whole thing is, are we going to have a government shutdown? Is he going to sign the bill?
I think you're going to see a shutdown. I wouldn't want to go to it now. If you did have it, it's a Democrat's fault. And I accepted the first one, and I'm proud of what we've accomplished.
So the next shutdown will be the Democrats' fault, even though he authorized Republicans, Senator Shelby from Alabama and others as part of that bipartisan working group, go get a deal. Now you can say they came back and the deal wasn't good enough. Okay. But again, my position is take the deal, take it as a stepping stone on a path to 2020. Don't get into this silliness of is this a win or a loss in real time, because win or a loss in real time doesn't matter. What matters is the path you're on and how treacherous you're going to make it for 2020. Take this opportunity to not only say we're doing something to protect Americans, we're doing something to protect people who want to be Americans, erstwhile new Americans. I'm still willing to talk about doing something on DACA designees because I'm interested in helping people and making people safe on both sides of the border.
And is that still part of the deal?
There is no deal. There's no deal. That wasn't included in what was released, at least.
Okay.
And so,
because he turned down $1.6 billion for 65 miles, and then he ends up with $1.37 billion for 55 miles.
Fascinating. And when he has pictures with new infrastructure on the border, and he has the Suburban Border Patrol, and he has a decline in illegal crossings, and he has probably fewer caravans forming and pilgrimaging up to the border, yeah, when it comes to the last 100 days of the 2020 cycle, that is going to make the memories, much less concerns, of particularly his base not remember, not care about the quarreling over dollars and miles we're doing now.
Yeah. It'll send a message if we construct any new wall. I mean, when we drove from Rocky Point back to the United States, that's Mexico, there were crosses, Dan, everywhere. And I thought, gosh, people get in a lot of car accidents around here. Like, no, these are families that have died trying to get to America that that go unreported, that we don't even know about it because it didn't happen in our country. I mean, they're scattered all throughout the mountains there. It's unbelievable.
This is a little bit
it was really jarring.
This is a little bit like a Nixon goes to China moment, or it could be, where he comes over the top and really is somebody who leads a complete rethinking of how we do immigration, how we enforce and protect our country from illegal immigration, and how we provide for the legal immigration we would like to see. I mean, he really has this opportunity now. Let's shut down the government again, or he should have never reopened the small portion of the government that was shut down. Okay, well, that's all past post. He deleveraged the moment that he provided this window to negotiate ended the partial shutdown. And once he did that, what was proposed the other evening and what he discussed yesterday was the inevitable outcome. You weren't going to do better than that when you're starting with House Democrats that are at $1 and walls are immoral. So, Ann Coulter can run around with her hair on fire as much as she wants. It doesn't change the political reality on the ground. You can't go back and replay the first 2 years of his administration where Republicans had control of Congress. You can't replay ending the partial shutdown. What you can do is take this, which moves the flag a little bit forward, and continue to lead on this issue so that you frame with perfect clarity how the respective parties and the respective nominees for each party would handle this as it pertains to the 2020 election. That, to me, is the sensible thing to do, but I'm willing to take alternative viewpoints. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, Trump not happy, not thrilled. But the question is, will he sign the proposal that's on the table? Should it make its way to his desk? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Randy and Sandwich, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan.
Morning.
This is going to hurt a little bit, but I want to make sure that you understand that when we go through these kind of phases, we're on the same team. Okay, at the end of the day, we're all on the same team.
you don't have to soften the blow for me. Thank you, though.
I want to because I respect your opinion and I respect you. Here's your method, and I want to refer to your method as the Ted Cruz way.
Uh-oh.
The Ted Cruz method is you go in there with a wiffle ball bat and try to negotiate. The people that voted for Trump, that's behind Trump right now, we want to use a sledgehammer. Go in there and smash the table up, go over the top of them, declare an emergency, and whatever happens after that, so be it, because we're tired of the way, the old way, of how we go in there and soft toe or in there and say, oh, we didn't get what we want, so what? No. Go around it. Do like Obama did, but Obama did it in a way where it was sleek and no one really noticed and everything kind of went unfazed. Where Trump does something like that, they just put the spotlight on it, so be it. Go in there and smash it up. I'll listen to your response. I hope you have a good day.
All right. Thanks for the call, Randy. Appreciate it.
Dan, yes.
Well, I mean...
You are growing a beard like Ted Cruz, too.
I am.
I'm also going to get
an alfalfa field planted in my forehead like Cruz did.
That's a secret.
Yeah, it's a real secret.
Don't tell anybody.
Real secret. Mike in Plano.
Hey, Dan. Yeah, you know, I agree with you for the most part. I mean, I don't want another shutdown fight. Shutdowns are not popular. The public doesn't want them. It does affect people outside of the government. You know, the way the last shutdown ended was because flights were grounded at JFK, which meant people couldn't fly for whatever business they had to do. Or LaGuardia, anyway. But, you know, the pushback from the right, you know, I heard Laura Ingraham, who I like very much, but she was on last night trashing the deal as usual. And here's the thing. Some of these nationalist populists in the media that support them need to realize we're in a divided government. I mean, you're not going to get much out of a Democrat House. She was on Twitter yesterday complaining about asylum reform. You're not going to get asylum reform passed through this Congress. So why keep advocating for stuff that's not going to pass?
Well, thanks for the call, Mike. You make a good point, and I think one of the things is that this is an opportunity to jujitsu the entire issue for Trump and the Republicans, and only because of Trump. That's what I was saying, comparing him to the Nixon goes to China thing. This is, yes, I want it all tomorrow, and yes, I want to stick it to the abolish ICE, walls are immoral, silliness of the socialists. But there's the reality on the ground in which you have to operate. And this is about more than just serving the Trump base, because it's about winning 2020 so you can continue to build on the results that you've produced in the first 2.5 years of your administration. So I I'm not saying everybody who disagrees with me is having a temper tantrum. I understand the frustration and exasperation. I understand that's what led to President Trump's election in the first place, nomination and election in the first place. But that doesn't mean that at some points and some moments you take a half a loaf or a quarter loaf where you can't get a full loaf because the landscape has changed and you're the person who everyone is looking to navigate that landscape. It has to be more than just the moment. And I think this is a moment for Trump to take that quarter loaf and live to fight and win another day.
No, it's true. coming up on.
I don't know what to tell people.
I'd be outraged about this.
Well, I get Randy's. I get Randy's point, but I get Mike's point. I'm not. This is like, you know, this. I understand. It's so easy. The easiest thing to do is just pound your fists on the table to try to feed people who are exasperated, frustrated. I'm exasperated, frustrated. Look, we've in Illinois, we've got the layer of everything happening in D.C. combined with everything happening in Illinois. I get it. But I also get taking a step back, trying to be a little bit dispassionate about it and say what makes the most strategic sense. That's all.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
How would I look walking a dog on the White House lawn?
But I was trying to think who had a cat.
Socks. The Clintons had Socks the cat.
On AM 560.
Well, to be fair, the Clintons also did have a bitch in the White House.
Hey-o.
The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The curious case of Jussie Smollett. We're at least finally getting some comments from the Chicago Police Department, Anthony Guglielmi, the Chicago Police spokesman, commenting on the phone records Smollett provided to cops to corroborate his version of the alleged attack, but pointing out they're limited and redacted and insufficient for criminal investigation. That's what Chicago Police said yesterday.
One of my friends who's close to the investigation, I'll just leave it at that, said it was a joke.
Yeah,
what he handed over to them. So what they need to find is a conversation that he was on the phone with his manager when the manager allegedly heard, "This is MAGA country." And that's
he heard the racial epithets.
According to my guys, he said that he heard them say MAGA country. The manager.
Oh, okay.
Heard that, and that's the conversation that they need. Guess what, Dan? It's not there. There's a black line. It's redacted.
Well,
now, why hand over your phone records? That's all they need to know is that conversation.
That's what Guglielmi said. We need something a little more concrete and direct if we're going to be able to say for a fact the conversation occurred.
I don't know how he's going to lie his way out of this one, but okay.
They still are treating Smollett as the victim in the case. We don't believe this is a case of manipulation, but when anyone hands over a redacted and limited record, like a PDF of a phone bill, for example, those records could be manipulated. Well, you don't say. We don't believe they are, but we have to be able to hold up to the standards of a criminal court. The records don't meet the burden for a criminal investigation. That seems all very fair. Chris Bastardi, who's a spokesperson for Smollett, said the redactions were intended to protect the privacy of personal contacts or high-profile individuals not relevant to the attack. Yeah, protect them from what? I mean, they're not. It wouldn't be germane to the case, so you just move on. Chicago police have not told us that they are rejecting any records, nor have they expressed concerns about the records to us, Bastardi went on. Well, now they have publicly, Mr. Bastardi, have said they don't meet the standard for a criminal investigation. We need a little bit more concrete and direct evidence of the conversation. That is the spokesman telling you and your client, Mr. Bastardi, that what you provided is of concern to the police because they can't do anything with it.
So what they're doing, they're asking them, to please submit the records again, because again, Chicago PD wants the phone records to authenticate that call that was made where he's on the phone with his manager and he hears the racial slurs and hears this is MAGA country.
Mm-hmm. Now, it is worth noting that Superintendent Johnson has said, again, that if the investigation reveals Smollett made a false police report, he will be held accountable.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. You sound skeptical.
I am, because I had a conversation. Hold on one second. Excuse me. I had a conversation with a Cook County State's attorney, an assistant state's attorney, who said, we have the information. We're scared to jump on it. We have the information about Proco Joe, Alderman Moreno, but we're afraid to jump on it because that is because of political correctness. And that's when it gets in the way of doing solid police work.
What do you think? Should we let cultural clout win the day here? This is a African-American gay actor who's doing us the solid of participating in the filming of Empire in Chicago, generating money and jobs. And so, you know,
they film a lot out in Barrington, but yeah,
maybe he made up a story. Maybe he embellished upon a story that has some factual basis. But let's not make this ugly. Let's just, if the police can find the alleged attackers, if it seems more likely than not that Smollett made up or embellished the story, let's just drop it and move on to bigger things like violent crime on the South and West sides. What do you say to that? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Because as Amy's contact said, this is low-level stuff.
Well, you know what, though? This hurts the reputation of Chicago. It perpetuates a stereotype that it's a violent city. And, oh, my gosh, we're so violent that we attack a gay black man and pour bleach on him. Why? Because we want him to be white? I even heard that argument in church that they poured bleach on him because they wanted him to be white. I'm like, no, are you kidding me?
What the hell is going on in that church of yours?
Oh, they have no idea that this might be all fabricated. And
no,
so I let them know
not.
Sunday. I said, guys, just so you know, you need to prepare yourself that this is he possibly might get charged for filing a false police report.
Could I, you know, if I was
and they went, oh no,
for your service. Next Sunday. For your Sunday service.
Yeah.
Why don't you just ask a point of order question? Hey, who reads in this congregation? I'll start. I do. Who reads any outlets? Does anybody read anything? Does anybody ask any questions about what they read? Or do you just wait for Rachel Maddow to tell you what you're supposed to repeat in your drum circle?
Yeah, and what they're supposed to think. Well, it's weird. I mean, also, back to the investigation, though. So my one guy, because I talked to him, I said, well, was the rope around his neck in any surveillance video? So they said, yes, and it wasn't a noose. It was a clothing line that was tied like a tie, not like a noose. He said, there's video of him in his lobby with that around his neck. And I said, well, is there a video of him walking into the building with that around his neck? And he would not tell me because he said that would interfere with the investigation.
Well, they were also reportedly trying to track down the actual source of
the rope, yeah,
the noose, what have you, find the point of purchase. Maybe there's video surveillance of whoever purchased it, but there's no indication they've done that yet.
No. And the only thing, the surveillance video, he's off camera for 60 seconds and then he comes back on. And at no point in time was he ever being physically assaulted on the video.
I think he went back to get some condiments for that Subway sandwich.
He had a tuna sandwich and a salad. That's what I found out. That's what he
bought. Maybe he was getting a free refill.
And shame on the New York Post for coming in and making our cops look bad. They found a hot sauce bottle with some what appeared to be bleach in it in a corner underneath the Sheridan, you know, hotel down there, and claimed that, oh, this could have been used. They come in 3 weeks later and grab the bottle and tell police. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Silly.
Well, I just think that they're trying to undermine our fine detectives, and they shouldn't do that.
Well, I don't know. By the same token, they published interviews of residents in Streeterville that were very skeptical that this happened.
Right.
So
that's true.
I think that, you know, look, I understand the cynicism as it pertains to law enforcement in Chicago sort of generally because of the politicization of it. And because of the lack of civilian political backing for the police. So I get that. And I share it. But I think the police have actually handled this pretty well because it's so politically charged and they need to be sensitive to that. So they're essentially what I hear, if I could read between the lines of what Guglielmi is saying and what Johnson has said, essentially giving him every opportunity. Every opportunity, turning over every stone, so that ultimately, if what the facts indicate is that this was made up or embellished, every step of the way, we gave you every opportunity to present evidence, to walk it back, to add context, and what you did is run, you know, your PR team into us.
He's hired a crisis manager to defend this. His agent is Ari Emanuel, Mayor Emanuel's brother. His manager is the guy he was allegedly on the phone with, and now they've hired a crisis management team to come in.
Do you think Ari Emanuel would do something as unseemly as call Rahm on this matter? And Rahm might say something to the Chicago police chief?
Oh, my God.
I mean, you don't think something like that would happen?
Oh, that would never happen in Chicago. Hey.
Yeah, the Ari Emanuel piece hasn't gotten enough play. I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, again, not that anything like that would ever happen. I'm sure there are walls of separation between the Emanuels, and I'm sure Ari would never do anything to try to influence how the city operates, particularly something as important as a police investigation.
And remember that lady who said she saw a redneck guy with a rope?
Yeah.
With gray, with the caramel-colored dress shoes? Mm-hmm. Minus 23-degree wind chill. Okay, yeah, that police were unable to find any video that ever suggested that anybody like that or with that description was in the area.
Also, 300 feet away, the guy that she saw, and she described in unbelievable detail, like she was a fashion magazine editor, 300 yards away, he's signaling to another guy.
Yeah,
and she catches all of this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
She may or may not have watched an old episode of The Wire that night.
That was
before
a bad tip, as we call it in the business.
Those identifications. Tom in Deer Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I say if there's a problem that we bury it. Bow to the gods of social justice warriors. Let's put our resources to where the real problems are. White teenagers, whether they're boys on campus or a bunch of Catholic kids on the mall wearing red hats. That's the problem in this country. It's white privilege. Go get them.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, boy, the Senate may want to factor in this story when Mitch McConnell calls roll for the
Green
GND.
New Deal?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't wait. That's going to be one to watch.
Smart. Get everybody on the record for
to
the
see where they stand, how progressive they really are.
For the Green Dream, as Nancy Pelosi calls it. Here's the story they may want to consider, and it comes from Pelosi land. California is going to pull the plug on its billion-dollar bullet train. This is
what's
supposed to replace the cars and the planes, you know.
That's right. The Ventura Freeway is backed up.
The estimated $77 billion bullet train.
Where was it supposed to go from where to where?
L.A. to San Francisco.
Mm.
It's more than a decade behind schedule. Billions in the red. Been plagued by problems from the start. It was championed by Governor Moonbeam. Governor Moonbeam, Green Dream. Makes sense. The latest estimate for completion was set for 2033. And yet, that would still have been completed before the Byrne interchange. That is the shocking thing. So, I mean, just factor that in as you're waxing optimistic about the impossibilities of AOC's GND.
Well, and here's Mitch McConnell, you know, talking about this is going to happen, folks.
We'll give everybody an opportunity to go on record and see how they feel about the Green New Deal.
I think it's very sporting of McConnell.
No, it's good because then you'll know where, you know, the presidential candidates stand. Your Cory Booker, your Elizabeth Warren, your Amy Klobuchar, or whatever you pronounce her name.
Sure, close enough.
Kamala Harris, all of them.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
We'll know where they stand.
Absolutely. No, I think it's very open-minded and dignified of McConnell to call that for a vote.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Look, we got more swag.
Oh, my goodness.
Our general manager just tweeted me this picture. I said, where's my Chicago's Morning Answer dog toy? And then our girl Friday there, Justin, got it for me. Look at this.
This is great. So I thought it was something else at first, but I'm not going to tell you what I thought it was. But this is really nice. So let's see if Bunky likes it. I'll tweet a picture. See if Bunky likes it. See if Hayek likes it.
I assume you go to the website to get the swag.
Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson from 5 to 9.
Yeah, you answer like
they're watching at home. Here
a
you
vocabulary
go.
Question
here,
or something.
Fetch.
You win one of these.
Go so get you it, got, Dan. Go.
Look at what's happening. Did somebody here win a lottery ticket? What's with all the marketing swag we now? We got the Words with Proft refrigerator magnet. We got the dog toy.
I still like the Words for Proft. And again, if you want to get your Words for Proft so you can play along at
words
home.
Words with Proft.
Words with
you
Proft.
You used the wrong preposition.
Excuse me. Go to 560theanswer.com/ Words with Proft, all one word.
I was thinking, I was talking to a friend of mine, I was thinking we probably have to have a series of these magnets because I'd like to categorize them. I'd like to have a magnet that's just dedicated to Latin phrases.
Okay.
Like
I'm still trying to get
ad hominem, post hoc ergo prompter hoc, reductio ad absurdum, you know, all the Latin phrases I like to use. And also one with French words.
Oh, please.
But I'm noir, filet du, dilettante, you know, you really need to categorize these, I think, to have maximum enjoyment.
Pronunciation?
Of what?
Where am I? This one.
Recalcitrant.
Recalcitrant.
A synonym would be obstinate.
Oh, okay.
Does that help?
Apparatchik?
Ocasio-Cortez and the suffragettes.
The suffragettes
would be your apparatchiks.
All right.
Yeah, okay. All right, speaking of Russia, maybe I need a whole Russian magnet, too.
Mellifluous. Mellifluous.
Yeah.
I'll just stick with Spalding, virtual signaling, governor, fungible. Those are easier.
And I should have a magnet for vocabulary words just for Iowa grads also.
Oh!
I think that's what you're saying, and I don't disagree.
Okay.
But going back to apparatchiks, hey, look, we got some new information about that Mueller investigation. Yeah, it's still going on. And here's my question about it. Does it turn out that the Mueller investigation has been a godsend to President Trump and Republicans, but particularly President Trump, of course? Is this going to turn out to be one of the best things to happen to Trump politically as you look ahead, not look behind at 2 years of consternation, as you look ahead to 2020? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Here's why I say that. John Dowd, the president's former counsel, right?
Yeah.
Veteran criminal defense attorney, told ABC News, I don't think there'll be a report. I will be shocked if anything regarding the president is made public.
What?
Other than we're done. He doesn't think there is any sort of Mueller report forthcoming that will be made publicly accessible. Now, both Barr, the incoming attorney general, as I think Whitaker said the same thing, acting attorney general, you know, they would make public what they could. It's a sort of an open-ended question at this point. But Dow thinks nothing is coming public except we're done. He goes on to say, I know exactly what Mueller has. I know exactly what every witness said, what every document said. I know exactly what he asked, and I know what the conclusion or the result is. There's no basis. There's no exposure. It's been a terrible waste of time. Now, Dowd is a former counsel to the president.
Right.
So he's not representing him in any official capacity anymore. And that doesn't mean he still doesn't have loyalties or whatever, but Dowd is putting his longstanding reputation as a respected criminal defense attorney on the line when he says all this. Sort of remarkable. Oh, and by the way, over on the Senate side of the investigation, right, you got Adam Schiff, the representative from Area 51, and the Moonbats in the House. But then you got the Senate. Richard Burr, who chairs the Senate Intelligence Committee, Republican from North Carolina, he tells ABC, if we write a report based on the facts that we have, then we don't have anything that would suggest there was collusion by the Trump campaign in Russia. That was a CBS News. He went on to talk to the other networks. We know we're getting to the bottom of the barrel because there's not new questions that we're searching for answers to. He told NBC, there is no factual evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. So it's interesting. The Democrat response on the Senate side this was the best iteration of it. We were never going to find a contract signed in blood saying, hey, Vlad, we're going to collude. Yeah, I know. And that's a funny way to try and deflect away from this fact. All you have is a bunch of dots with no connectors.
And all they have is five ex-Trump aides who struck plea deals with Mueller during this investigation, where they mostly lied to the FBI or to Congress.
Process crimes that occurred during the investigation, right. Not anything Mueller was charged to investigate in terms of what had occurred.
Yeah, and none of them led to collusion or alleged collusion.
But these are remarkable statements. By the way, Richard Burr has been an ardent defender of the Mueller investigation, of letting it play out, mm-hmm. of believing in Mueller's integrity. So this is no sort of a rote Trump loyalist, Richard Burr. And again, when you make these sort of declarative statements, you're putting your reputation online of all of a sudden there's evidence that comes to light that suggests something substantially different than what you're saying. And these people, Richard Burr, the president's former counsel, John Dowd, would be in a position to know a hell of a lot more than anybody, including us, talking about it in the media. So I ask the question again, thinking about this in context, you know, building this into sort of the price of supporting Trump and letting this play out, taking the slings and arrows, mostly President Trump taking the slings and arrows, and offering some in return, of course. Does it turn out that this is going to be an asset, the Mueller investigation, for Trump going into the 2020 election? Because here's what he'll have to say. I didn't interfere.
Right.
I let it play out. They had their guy, Mueller. I didn't fire anybody. I mean, except Comey. That was for cause. That was part of the investigation. And I listened to all of the former Obama apparatchiks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Put that on your board.
Sure. you know, in terms of clap on, clap off, clap on, clap off, James Clapper and John Brennan and Comey after he was dismissed. We saw what happened at the upper echelons of leadership of the FBI that were holdovers from the Obama era. Let it all play out, and here's what they've got. Nothing. If what Dowd and Burr are saying turns out to be substantiated by the facts or the report, to the extent we see anything of the report, and the presidential response perhaps connected to that report, released simultaneously, perhaps. But if that's what it turns out, look, I allowed them to do a full proctology exam. They had the resources. They had the time. It went to its natural conclusion. And you know what they found? Nothing. So now I'm the most, you know, I'm the most vetted candidate for president in the history of the United States, one might argue. And frankly, the most mistreated by the top law enforcement agencies in the country. And I survived it all because I let it play out and I let the facts go. And I let the investigation go where it would in pursuit of answers to questions people had. Did I think it was a witch hunt the entire time? Yes. And I said so. And guess what? I turned out to be right. If that's what Trump can say and the evidence bears that statement out, man, doesn't that enhance his position for 20?
Oh, yeah.
Candace in Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin.
I like the clever use of words. It's like ilk, but sounds smarter.
Okay.
Okay, Dan, if this is all true, why is Manafort starving to death, still in confinement by himself? I would like to know why every conservative pundit isn't railing on this, because the left would do it to anybody that they could.
Well, Mueller charged him with hiding his lobbying work and money that they made from it from the government.
But that's
as well
that's
as other
IRS
financial
stuff.
Crimes.
Well, it's more than IRS stuff. It's yeah. Violations of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act and so forth. So
okay,
yeah, I mean, thanks for the call, Candace.
I mean, did he get caught because he was, you know, the campaign chairman for President Trump for a short bit?
Yeah. Right.
I mean, obviously.
Would they have ever looked into Manafort's business and prosecuted him on that level? Gone for the penalties they've gone for if he wasn't the campaign chairman for Trump for a period of time? No, of course not.
No.
Of course not.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't have any sympathy for Manafort per se. There's an argument about whether he violated his plea arrangement, and now that's being litigated. But, look, I will say what I've said from the beginning. Trump surrounded himself with some bad people, some goofs, some slippery characters. And so he's gotten some slime on him as a result of those that he chose to surround himself with. And that's on him. But that doesn't make out a Russian collusion case. And it doesn't make out illegality.
On an ancillary issue, Michael Cohen was supposed to testify yesterday in Congress, you know, again, for the third time he's postponing. He said that he had pain from shoulder surgery. Well, on Saturday night, he was out with the boys in New York at a swanky restaurant. So, I mean, he's a hot mess.
Yeah. Well,
if you're going to call in sick for your congressional testimony, don't go out and party the night before. Just a piece of advice.
There's a great witness for the state there. By the way, nice use of the word ancillary.
Oh, can we put that on a magnet?
Sure.
Words with Amy. Hi.
Your magnet will be Word with Amy. Craig in Mount Greenwood.
Hey, Dan and Amy. Hey, listen, this thing, one of the best things that could come out of it is to turn this thing right around on Mueller. Nobody talks about it. That Mueller was the top FBI guy when the uranium deal was going on with Hillary Clinton. Those guys were all in cahoots. He was involved in that, knew that how dirty with Russia and everything all that was. And he probably got a lot of money back then. Someone needs to turn this thing around and expose the fact he is a dirty, dirty cop, that guy. That Mueller is always in the shadows with all kinds of bad things that have happened in the past, and nobody talks about it. Need to turn it around on that guy.
Thanks for the call, Craig. I mean, I think his work product will speak for itself, and the reviews of that work product will define Mueller. So I just leave it there. I don't think you have to go further than that. John in Palatine.
Hi, Dan and Amy.
Hello.
Listen, I just noticed, I think Dan's magnet is really making an impact, at least with Sean from Elmwood Park, because I noticed he's using the word apparatchik in about every third sentence now. So it's really working.
That's great. Thanks for the call, John. You know, it's never too late to get hooked on phonics to learn the English language, not even for Sean from Elmwood Park. So, you know, consider it a public service.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, Carl Spackler's back. Yes. And this is a great gift for the looper in your life. A new documentary, Loopers, The Caddy's Long Walk, narrated by Chicago's very own Bill Murray.
Bill Murray?
Carl
oh, good.
Spackler. Yeah. It's great.
He's a former caddy. I'm sure you're going to love this.
I'm already looking forward
Where
to
it. Where did you caddy again? Chicago?
Chicago Golf Club, the oldest 18-hole course in America.
Chicago Golf Club. Oh. Mm-hmm. I'm going to Conway Farms soon.
Good
I'm
for you.
Play 18 by myself.
When is that? In late February? Or when is that going to be?
Somebody's told me they got a tea time for
it. No, good.
So I'm going to go.
Filmed on location everywhere from Augusta to the old course at St. Andrews in Scotland. The film examines the place of the caddy in golf history. I wonder if I'll be in it. As well as the relationship and bonds golfer and caddy developed through their time together on the links. This is great. I'm looking forward to this. I hope they profile the story of Matt Kuchar and El Toucan.
What's that?
Did you see this? No. Matt Kuchar, caddy's public enemy number one. Matt Kuchar needed a substitute caddy at the Mayakoba Golf Classic past November. I played that course.
Oh, that's right,
in
Punta Cana. Yeah, Capacana. It's right. A private gated area.
It's a great track. It was a lot of fun. So they have a PGA tournament there.
Yeah.
Kuchar's needed a substitute caddy, so he got El Toucan, whose real name is David Herral Ortiz. Kuchar won the tournament. $1.296 million was the winning purse.
It was the purse, yeah. How much did he get as a caddy? What's the tip on that?
Well, what do you think he should get?
10% of it.
Yeah, that's about standard,
right?
Right. So that'd be 130 grand, round number.
You know what? I kind of I figured that out.
He got 5,000.
Oh!
And so this story started to circulate. And then remember, this tournament was back in November of last year.
Oh, that's bad.
He got $5,000.
That's bull jive.
He wrote in it. He contacted Kuchar's agent. And his agent is Mark Steinberg. Said, I'm not looking to disparage Matt or give him a bad name. Fair is fair, and I feel like I was taken advantage of it by placing my trust in Matt. Steinberg responded, I'm out of the country. What Matt offered is fair. Well.
It's not fair.
No.
Poor form, buddy.
Ortiz said he and Kuchar had an agreement for $3,000 at the outset, plus an unspecified amount of the player's winnings. He was disappointed when he counted $5,000 in the envelope Kuchar handed him on Sunday night after he won. So what happened, you know, what started out this great story and this guy substitutes for Kuchar's regular tour caddy, and he wins $5,000 out of $1.26 million. To $1.296 million? No.
It's laughable.
No.
Yeah.
No. On the bright side, Ortez says he's getting more caddy gigs at the Mayakoba Resort since adding a PGA Tour win to his resume. I'm sure. I'm going to look for him next time we're down in Punta Cana. Here's the thing. This is what's great. This is why I love this guy. So when this story started to circulate and it started to look, you know, like Kuchar's cheapskate, which he is apparently, Kuchar offered him an additional $15,000 for a total of $20,000.
No. And I mean, he's making Scottie Pippen look really good right now.
No Tippin Kuchar. Doesn't rhyme.
But you know what? It's karma. It's going to come back and get him. Trust me.
Offered an additional $15,000 to El Tucan. And I love caddies that have nicknames. He told him to go pound sand. Keep your money. Oh. Now, $15,000 is a lot of money for this guy. And on principle, he said, you're cheating me. I don't want it. Good for him. And terrible for Matt Kuchar. Terrible story. All right, so remember Matt Kuchar. Remember El Tucan if you go down to the Dominican to play Mayakoba. And pick up Looper's, the caddy's long walk for the Looper love in your life. Oh, Amy.
Okay. Yeah.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
They call it a selfie. I can't even say the word without sweating. I can't stand the word.
On AM 560.
I call it taking a lonely.
But first, let me take a selfie.
The Answer.
That stuff, SJ Maniscalco, is funny. So wait, I was conflating golf courses. We were talking about Kuchar's caddy, that tournament, Mayakoba. Mayakoba's Playa del Carmen where we went.
And
I was thinking it was in Dominican, so I was just misremembering all of the golf courses and all of the tropical locales that we've played over the last several years.
All we
years.
Know is that we want to play with you in Nueva Vallarta at the Flamingo course, okay?
Yeah. Okay, so glad we set the record straight. Still looking up El Tucan when I get back down to Playa del Carmen and still say shame, shame, shame on Matt Kuchar. Switching gears. Couple of interesting pieces authored over the last few weeks, including in Primus, which is published by Hillsdale College. Alex Berenson is a Yale graduate and a journalist for the New York Times who covered the pharmaceutical industry. His wife was a senior psychiatrist at Mid-Hudson Forensic Psychiatric Institute. It's one of three places the state of New York sends the criminally mentally ill. Defendant judged not guilty by reason of insanity. The topic is marijuana. And as Berenson writes, almost everything you think you know about the health effects of cannabis, almost everything advocates and the media have told you for a generation is wrong. So are you ready for this? Since everybody... is there a mayoral candidate for Chicago who does not support the legalization of marijuana? Some maybe are not enthusiastically, but recognize it's coming at the state level, so they want to get their cut. And obviously, Governor Spaulding is full force to legalize marijuana because, you know.
They could use it to help pay off the pension debt.
Oh, right, yeah.
But I liked what Paul Vallis said yesterday. Use it to help, you know, those with opioid addictions.
Sure. Legalize drugs to help drug abusers. That's about the logic of the political class in the state. So as you're thinking about this, and we're all celebrating because we love the mob economy in Chicago and Illinois, gambling, drugs, you know, someday prostitution if Danny Solis gets his way.
Too soon. Way too soon.
By the way, has there been an APB?
No, we can't find him.
I even called
his cell phone number and it says he's not taking phone calls right now.
Well, that's the point. APB to all the Chicagoland area massage parlors to locate him.
Nobody's filed a missing persons report. I did check, but he has not showed up for his job. Mm. I mean, he stepped down from the committee he's on, but he's still an alderman.
His
constituents can't find him, and they ask him where he is, and people go, shrug their shoulders.
I don't know. Yeah. A 25th Ward shutdown. Can you tell the difference in your life between Solis being there or not being there, other than you don't have to pay extortion payments as long as he's not around? Okay, so back to marijuana. So I bring this up because it's being celebrated at the national level, too. remember, here's where we're at. We've got 10 states in the District of Columbia have legalized recreational marijuana. Another 8 look likely to do so in 2019, including Illinois.
Well, Colorado, the first state to legalize marijuana, just reached its $6 billion in sales.
I know. It's great, right? Here's Kamala Harris. She's a candidate for president. She's a senator from California. She was on this Breakfast Club show that Cory Booker was on. Remember we played him last week talking about his boo?
My kids love that show. I don't know why. They think it's really cool. They're like, she was on Breakfast Club. Oh, what did she say?
And the host is a guy named Charlemagne?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's down with you. Cool, man. Be like one of the cool kids. Yo.
Well, Kamala wants to be like one of the cool kids talking about smoking dope and how much fun she has. Because how much joy it brings.
Have you ever smoked?
I have.
Okay.
Like I inhaled. I did inhale.
Oh, you did inhale. Okay.
It was a long time ago. But yes.
I know you have to go. They say you have to go. I just
broke loose.
I mean, was it in college? See, I like stuff like that. That's a real honest answer.
Real.
Was it a blunt or joint?
It was a joint.
Hey.
Yeah.
You remember the high?
I do.
So if it was legalized all throughout the country, and medicinal,
are you high right now?
Do it.
Listen,
again?
I think that it gives a lot of people joy, and we need more joy.
We need more joy in this world.
Somebody need a bag of Doritos? Yeah. Yeah, comfortably numb indeed. Good idea, legalize marijuana. How about nationally? Take the heavy lifting off of the backs of state and local. Peter Bach is a pulmonary physician at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, New York. He's okay with the move to legalize recreational marijuana. But he also says this. We should set the record straight, lest young people and old ones think marijuana is good for you because it is wrongly labeled a medication. Actual medicines have research behind them, enumerating their benefits, characterizing their harms, and ensuring the former supersedes the latter. Marijuana doesn't. It's a toxin, not a medicine. It's a toxin, not a medicine. It impairs judgment and driving ability, increases the risk of psychosis and schizophrenia. Smoking, it damages the respiratory tract. A 2017 report from the National Academy of Medicine called the evidence for these harms substantial. Advocates like to note the cannabidiol, an extract of the plant, is an approved medication for epilepsy. But medicine from a plant does not make the plant medicine. It's like a poodle is a dog, but not all dogs are poodles. Google Foxglove, he writes, the plant from which the cardiac drug digitalis is derived. First hit show it's a pretty flower, but soon you get the number for poison control. Everything you think you know and have been told by the media, political, industrial complex, who are looking for new revenue sources, who are predatory in nature, because that's what government has become, preying on constituents, because they want to continue to spend to aggrandize their power. Nothing makes it easier to make people dependent on you than if they're all drugged up, right? Going back to Alex Berenson and his piece in Imprimis, Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence. His wife, Jackie, the senior psychiatrist at the Mid-Hudson Forensic Psychiatric Institute. Many of Mid-Hudson's 300 patients are killers and arsonists. At least one is a cannibal. Most have been diagnosed with psychotic disorders like schizophrenia that provoke them to violence against family members or strangers. A couple of years ago, Jackie was telling me about a patient. In passing, she said something like, of course he'd been smoking pot his whole life. Of course, I said. Yes, they all smoke. So marijuana causes schizophrenia? Question mark. I was surprised to say the least, writes Berenson. I tended to be a libertarian on drugs. Years before, I covered the pharmaceutical industry for the New York Times. I was aware of the claims about marijuana's medicine, toxin, not medicine, we just heard. And I watched the slow spread of legalized cannabis without much interest. His wife said, rather than saying, you know, I know what I'm talking about, you don't, she just said, go read the studies. Berenson writes, so I did. The big studies, the little ones, and all the rest. I read everything I could find. I talked to every psychiatrist and brain scientist who would talk to me. And I soon realized that in all my years as a journalist, I had never seen a story where the gap between insider and outsider knowledge was so great or the stakes so high. I began to wonder why, with the stocks of cannabis companies soaring and politicians promoting legalization as a low-risk way to raise tax revenue and reduce crime, I had never heard the truth about marijuana, mental illness, and violence. In reality, the medicinal effects, in reality, like alcohol, marijuana is too weak as a painkiller to work for most people who truly need opiates. Even the co-founder of the Marijuana Policy Project acknowledges that they have always viewed medical marijuana laws primarily as a way to protect recreational users. It was always medical marijuana was the gateway argument for recreational marijuana because this is about profits and tax revenue. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. You still willing to get all giggly like Kamala over marijuana legalization? You willing to kind of roll over and say, well, it's going to happen anyway in Illinois and elsewhere, so we might as well sit back and enjoy it, get some revenue, you know, maybe have a doobie.
Well, what's next on the legalization of cocaine? I mean, is this a gateway drug to other things?
Well, it's a gateway drug politically. The drug is money. That's the real drug here.
We need
marijuana.
Revenue, right.
Marijuana can cause or worsen severe mental illness, especially psychosis, the medical term for break from reality. Teenagers who smoke marijuana regularly are about three times as likely to develop schizophrenia.
Oh my gosh.
Which is obviously the most devastating psychotic disorder. Again, National Academy of Medicine's 2017 study that was also referenced by the Sloan Kettering doctor. Cannabis use is likely to increase the risk of developing schizophrenia and other psychoses. The higher the use, the greater the risk. Also, regular cannabis use is likely to increase the risk for developing social anxiety disorder. A gateway drug, American Journal of Psychiatry, 2018. People who used cannabis in 2001 were almost three times as likely to use opiates 3 years later, even adjusting for other potential risks. The other thing that's happening with legalization, the concentration, it's more potent, right? In the 1970s, the last time many Americans used cannabis, most marijuana contained less than 2% THC. Today, marijuana routinely contains 20 to 25% THC.
I hate pot. I wouldn't smoke. But I have friends, Dan, who smoke it. They don't drink, and they smoke pot, and some of the smartest people I know.
Uh-huh, for now. Research from Finland and Denmark.
They've been doing it for decades.
Yeah, so?
I don't mean to laugh, but I'm just saying that they don't believe in alcohol. And they're like, why can't I get a buzz on or do something that relaxes me? You can drink, and I can have that.
This is what I want to do, so just let me do it. You do other things kind of argument. I'm not interested in it. That's just all the navel-gazing, self-referential bull jive. Just giving you what the science is. Do people want to have a scientific discussion about this? Or do you just want to pretend that the marketing done by the media political complex is the last word on the topic? Research from Finland and Denmark, two countries that track mental illness more comprehensively. Significant increase in psychosis in 2000 following an increase in cannabis use.
Oh.
I mean, if you don't care about mental illness, which everybody pretends to care about, if you don't care about the heightened risks that are posed by marijuana use, if you don't care about the truth, you know, you want to delude yourself into believing it's a medicine, not a toxin, as the Sloan Kettering doctor said, fine, do whatever you want. But don't pretend that something is not what it is. Don't pretend that marijuana is a medicine when it's a toxin. Don't pretend that there are no risks associated. Don't pretend that this isn't predatory government looking to get through your back pocket what it can't take through your front pocket. Don't pretend that it's not politicians who like their electorate doped up. And by the way, to borrow from Anthony Esselin, you know, because one thing is legal, that can be abused and have all sorts of deleterious side effects and implications like alcohol abuse. then anything goes. We should try to do what we can where we can. And this is in its infancy, even still. So I'm saying, do you want to be honest with yourselves? These are people, again, the Sloan Kettering doctor, I favor the move of legalization, but he's just telling you the science. Berenson sounds, I don't know him. We're going to try to get him on the show, but he sounds from the read left of center. This isn't ideological. You're either interested in facts or you're not. You're interested in research or you're not. But don't give me the kind of morally equivalent lines of, you drink alcohol, I smoke weed. You know, it's just to each his own. Fine, to each his own. Now let's talk about the facts. Now let's talk about the science. Now let's talk about the research. And then tell me how this makes sense and how it should be promoted. Should we be purposely oblivious to it? Or should we be fully forthright about it? That's the question. Dan in Libertyville.
All right, thanks for taking my call. I've got a really good example of this for you. It's in Highland Park. A young man named Colin Nutter was murdered by three fellow high school students or recently high school graduates of Highland Park. He thought they were his friends. They contemplated and worked on a way in which to secretly get him to go out, and then they murdered him. All three of them were together. They planned it together, and they did for a bag of weed that wasn't even worth $200.
Now,
you won't hear about this much in the news. They cover it up because Highland Park wants a dispensary in their town. It's kind of hard to acknowledge that four of your youth have destroyed their lives, their families' lives, their friends' lives, and over something that you wish to sell now in your town.
Thanks, Dan. Do we want to do what we want to do? Okay, fine. Bring a brothel to Highland Park. Danny Solis will patronize it. And bring his friends from the city council. What's the difference, right? It's just about people as revenue agents. Anything for money. Robert in Bloomingdale.
Hello?
Yeah, Robert.
Yeah, they just look at it as revenue. If they can collect as much revenue as they collect from alcohol right now, that's all they care about. You know, they'll hire some more of their friends to get them more political jobs. That's all they care about.
Thanks, Robert. Mike on the north side.
Good morning, Dan. Usually you are the voice of reason in a sea of mediocrity.
Yeah, still am.
But I have to take issue with you on this. You know, facts don't matter. In fact, I think that is the slogan of one of the radio stations down the dial. Facts don't matter. But we need this marijuana. Now, I couldn't invest in the marijuana. I was too late getting on that train. But we're going to fund the Chicago LGBT party. We're going to have mobile catering trucks, nacho Doritos, Twinkies, cupcakes, and ho-hos. We're going to make a killing on that. And we're going to use that money to start a political party to take this city back.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mike. And Kamala Harris will be your first customer.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560 The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Kristen McQueary, friend of the show, writing in the Tribune. Today's quiz, is there a Republican in the race for Chicago mayor? Which of the 14 candidates in the race for Chicago mayor best capture conservative principles of efficient government, low taxation, personal responsibility, and protecting the rights of law-abiding gun owners? Just kidding, there isn't one. But she points out that in a race to, say, 15%, maybe less, of the vote to get to the runoff, the 135,000 votes Trump got in Chicago, for example, in November of 2016, which is only 12.5%, but and a race to 12 to 15%, 12.5% is a big number.
Yeah, you need every single vote.
So Republicans could actually impact the outcome of the mayor's race for the first time in a century by impacting who makes the runoff on February 26th. She points out we talked about, and I co-moderated a forum, candidate forum. Six of the 14 showed up. Northwest Side Republican Club. The Northwest Side Republican Club and Chicago Young Republicans made an endorsement. They endorsed Willie Wilson.
Really?
Willie Wilson, I would argue, the one successful entrepreneur in the race. As McQuarrie writes of the endorsement, a businessman who understands the need to reduce taxes and grow Chicago, Wilson comes closest to representing Chicago Young Republicans' principles, says Chicago YR President Chris Myers. Quote, he would lower taxes and lower regulations to grow the economy in all neighborhoods. He also supports school choice, a property tax cap, and the abolition of red light cameras. McQuarrie adds, the support for Wilson actually comes from a genuine place of policy pursuit, not what have you done for me lately posture of establishment political parties. For them, we're talking about Republicans that have endorsed Wilson, Wilson offers a break from the status quo. And I'll tell you what, it's very interesting. All of the money that Bill Daley is piling up, and he just got $1 million from Ken Griffin.
Ugh. When did that happen? Yesterday?
Yeah, recently. I've seen polling recently that has Preckwinkle in the lead and Willie Wilson in second position. Wow. So we've said from the outset of this, in a crowded field, you could have a surprise. Wilson has run before. He's known, particularly in some of the black areas of the city. I'm sorry to say that we say black areas of the city, Latino areas of the city, because we're the most segregated city in America, which is another shameful reality in Chicago. And that surprise could come in the form of Willie Wilson, who, because of his success in business, has been able to largely underwrite his campaign and compete, not dollar for dollar, but compete on the airwaves with the likes of the Bill Daleys and the Tony Preckwinkles.
Yeah, I mean, he was invited to the Fox 32
yes, that's right.
debate. And there was no question. He was one of the top five that was there.
Very interesting times, and we're pleased to be joined again by the aforesaid Willie Wilson. Willie, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Hey, Dan, Amy, how you guys doing?
Good. Good to have you. You seem to be doing pretty well, some momentum. And your reaction to the support from officially licensed Republican organizations like the Chicago Young Republicans and the Northwest Side GOP?
Well, I'm very appreciative of their support. I mean, I look at it not only as Democrat Republican, but all citizens of Chicago. I mean, when you pay taxes, taxes goes up higher. It doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat. I mean, you don't need these taxes going up when people are leaving out of their homes and leaving out of the city and leaving out of the state. So, I'm inclusion. I mean, inclusion means putting all different departments filled with Democrat, Republican, and other. It really doesn't matter. You know, I mean, we got a serious problem here. Taxes raised at 8 times, red light cameras, tax on bags, feed-in taxes. That's hurt us all. Well, we're Republican, Democrat, and we should be concerned about it. And this corruption. These politicians right now in office now need lock up. I'll just be honest with you. They need investigated and lock up if they're caught doing something wrong.
Well, first of all, you got to find them. You know, you got to find Danny Solis before you can lock him up.
He's in hiding because he was the snitch. So, Willie Wilson, how do you feel about the legalization of marijuana and what, you know, if it does happen at the state level, how do you want where do you want the revenue to go?
Well, I do support it. One of my point. I don't think that someone should be locked up for using marijuana. I think if they got an issue or something like that in terms of drugs, they should be allowed to and go into a clinic, rehab. You know, but for marijuana, locking up people for that and it costs $169 a day in prison, and you can't get out for $100. And you're in there for a year or two, but we would take the revenues. Obviously, we got issue with pension, with fire department, police department, and school teacher. But that ain't the necessary biggest problem. Biggest problem is this: there's a budget like $10 billion for Chicago. $7 billion is in payroll. Look, if a person make $100,000 a year just using this for Chicago, they end up making $200,000 or $250,000 overtime. You know, cut out the overtime, get it from $7 billion, get it and check with San Francisco, maybe $3.5 billion. Save that money, put some of those dollars over there to help pay some of the pension, and open back up some of these schools. Make smaller schools, since a lot of people left out of Chicago, Chicago since all these taxes. Make smaller schools to the neighborhood.
What about?
So we would use that. The rest of it is mismanagement. Open up the casino, open up the Mag Steel, things of that nature. And we pretty much got this budget under control. And don't forget about all the corruption that caused us billions and billions of dollars. It's crazy. It's literally crazy.
Yeah, I want my own hangar at Biggs Field when you reopen it. I want that. Not my own, but I want it just named
after
me.
Well, you got your names on it
named
already.
After
I like
me,
going
yeah.
to concerts there,
Dan
though.
Proft hangar. So here's the thing. Going back to what you were saying, it, not only if you make $100,000 when you do the burden salary, it's $150,000, you throw in overtime, maybe you get to $200,000. Just the percentage of people in city government that make $100,000, that make substantially more than the median household that's financing them, and that's before you get to the gold-plated guaranteed seven-figure pensions. What about reducing headcount and, frankly, in some cases, reducing salaries, restructuring salaries for those not governed by collective bargaining agreements? Because, as you said, that's where a majority of the money is being spent. So if you want to start really producing balanced budgets, then you're going to have to address that.
Well, we're going to have to address it. Look, I'm the only candidate in this race, by the way, who basically uses 99.99% of my own money.
Right.
And I'm a spent somewhere like $1.3 million, $1.4 million, $1.5 million, somewhere in there of my own money to make sure that, look, I'm not going to be here bought for major corporations and things of that nature, or I'm not going to accept $1 million or $2 million from the union. I'm not going to do that. I'm running for the citizen of the city of Chicago. But you got to restructure this whole thing. Chicago is a big, big international city. And I am definitely pro-business. Pro-business means jobs and things of that nature. All right? So you got to get a hold of this budget. You cannot have a budget, let's say, a payroll 7% or 75% almost, of your whole income, all right? So you have to go back and restructure this thing. You lower the taxes, then you bring international business into here. You bring business in the United States into Chicago. Then you lower taxes, you raise revenue. People don't go to Indiana and buy gas or go to Walmart and buy groceries. We are Chicago. The Indiana, Tennessee, Texas, look, those guys beating us out with jobs and everything. All right, but because our tax is too high. All right, but you got to get a hold of the structure of the whole scenario. And by the way, I would make my administration Republican, Democrat, and any other organization that is out here, the Libertarian, all of us, we will make them part of the administration and bring them together. We all got good ideas, and we can work and put them together and stop looking at labor. Of a party name or something of that nature there. That's how you have to run it together. And then that way, everybody's inclusion. That whole budget thing going to wreck us, you know, if we don't get a hold of it. You have to deal with it. And the last on that subject there is that we got to deal with and bring the union and sit down and talk to the union, negotiate stuff the right way and making sure it's everything's done fairly. Out here and sit down and talk and work this thing out. Otherwise, we drive in a car and don't have the experience, you know?
Yeah. Well, it sounds good. I mean, getting rid of red light cameras, lowering taxes for businesses, but how are you going to generate revenue then for the city of Chicago? What are your...
Well, they're going to be... Well, look, as I said a few minutes ago, payroll is, you know, $7 billion. When a payroll should, and for a city of Chicago, comparable to others in other cities, you're like $3 or $4 billion. You got $2 or $3 billion right there. You got the rest of it in terms of management. You can take the casino. You can take the marijuana. You know, you can take the Mag Field and rack up another $3 or $4 billion there. You can bid out the process when people take them come into the city. And they're the same people getting the bid or the contract with no bid, bid it out and get those costs down.
You got
politician, like, okay, you got politician right now talking about saving the city money and balancing budget, running taxpayer dollar up. You got people like Tony Preckwinkle, Mendoza, that ran for a job and getting paid for it, and now they're running for another job and ain't working on a job they're getting paid for.
I want to switch gears. Police, your position again on the future of Superintendent Eddie Johnson. If you were mayor, would you replace him? And what else would you do to increase the peace on the west and south sides of the city?
Well, I've always said this about, and I don't know Eddie Johnson, a person like that. I only shook his hand once, and I was at the police funeral back here 2 months ago. One of the two, they got hit by, unfortunately, by the train.
Right.
And I shook his hand the first time I ever shook his hand. I said anybody who is who's related to communication and taking orders or friends of Mayor Emanuel got to go. They got to go because he's doing what the mayor is telling him to do. You know, he's not standing up for the citizen in terms of as related to the mayor situation now. So that would have to take then obviously go. I don't think the problem in Chicago is so much as the violence in pretty much in about 8 communities. So those 8 communities don't have jobs, don't have anything in them to survive but the drugs and things of that nature. But what you got to do, you got to take them and put the contracts and jobs in those communities, then the crime will go down. But what happened is that when you take the resources out of a community and leave nothing in there, then you got issues. So I would take some of that $8.5 billion of O'Hare, some of that $2 billion for the walkway from downtown to China, put $1 billion or $2 billion over there and create the job and put the infrastructure together and create training and good rent so people learn a skill and they can get good jobs. That's where you bring the crime down,
yeah,
and you save more money because you ain't got to lock up people cost $169 a day, and they in there for a year, 2 or 3 years, and ain't got $100 to get out. That's to show you how backward this whole thing is. I've gotten a lot of young men and young ladies out of jail, and I go back to Nate 3 or 4 months, whatever it may be, they back in there. So they said, doctor, give me a job. We won't come in here because drugs doesn't pay. That's how we'll fix this problem.
Let me take a step back, because perhaps there's a number of people listening that don't exactly know your background. They hear that you, as you just said, you've spent maybe $1.3 to $1.5 million of your own money, and they wonder, well, how has Willie Wilson become so successful? So just in brief, could you give us a little bit of your personal story and how you became so successful in business?
Oh, yeah. Well, I made 20 cents per hour picking cotton and chopping cotton. I ran away from home at 13. I'm from the Jim Crow days. And so we didn't have anything. 11 sisters and brother and I wanted to get them out of there, my mother and father, and we were successful in doing it. I came to Chicago and worked for $2 per hour flipping hamburgers for McDonald's. And Ray Kroc, the founder of McDonald's, I met him and I asked him for McDonald's, and he said, well, do you have any money? And I said, no, sir, I don't have any money. I said, but I worked 5-10 years for McDonald's, and 5 of those first years, I didn't have a day off to learn the business. And so he said, okay, come with me. And we got started, and we got the first McDonald's. And after that, two and a half years, I owned 5 McDonald's, and I left there and started my own Omark Medical Supplies with some of the Fortune 500 companies we do business with, and we're like worldwide. We got 5 DCs in the United States, distribution center, a couple of them in China, and we shipped to Australia, Israel, and product disposable gloves and can liners. And we got a company, we work it all our way up. From 20 cents per hour coming down south, today we have a $62 million company, and I'm debt free.
no debt.
Wow.
And so we worked hard for it. We came to the era of here again, the Jim Crow days. I learned not to hate a person because of their color. Forget about that mess. Because if you begin to hate because somebody else hates you because of the color, you know better than they are. You know. So my mother said, don't ever hate people. Just love them regardless of what you do to them. And so we learned to do it. But hard work, persistence, and the other thing is I have faith. I'm a Christian. I have faith. You know, and that's hard work. And people may think that might sound odd to them. A little faith and hard work would get it. And I look, as when I become mayor of Chicago, by the way, I would put silent prayer back into school.
Oh, really?
Faith and hard work is what gets it. That's what's, boy, CPS could use both of those in much greater supply. He is Willie Wilson. Great story. I love the intersection with the founder, Ray Kroc, and how that launched your business career in part, at least. Willie Wilson, again, Willie, the website, if people want to learn more about your candidacy and campaign.
Yeah, go to WillieWilsonForMayor.com, WillieWilsonForMayor.com. You can learn a lot from me there. But I will say to your audience that listened to me today on this radio broadcast here is that a lot of people say what they going to do. I said, look back in my past, what I've already done. That you make the right choice from that. Vote for me, point 22.
All right. Willie Wilson, candidate for mayor on February 26th. WillieWilsonForMayor.com is the website. Willie, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and she's only been in Congress a short time, but she's already compiled a number of greatest hits. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez I'm talking about. She's so important. Her idea is so big, so profound, AOC's GND is going to get an up or down in the Senate. Thanks to Mitch McConnell.
Mitch McConnell's all over this, folks.
We'll give everybody an opportunity to go on record and see how they feel about the Green New Deal.
Love it. I think that's very generous of Mitch McConnell to do so.
Who wants to get rid of the American Airlines, United Airlines, all the airlines? We're going to take a choo-choo train, Dan.
Pay you if you're unable or unwilling to work. Free college, free house, government job. It's all good. Ocasio-Cortez, just a couple of the instant classics from Ocasio-Cortez of the recent past, just to give you a sense of the size of the intellect we're dealing with here.
I think the first thing that we need to do is kind of break the mistaken idea that taxes pay for 100% of government expenditure. It's just not how government expenditure works. We can recoup costs, but oftentimes you look at, for example, the GOP tax cut, which I think was an irresponsible use of government expenditure. But government projects are often financed by a combination of taxes, deficit spending, and other kinds of investments, you know, bonds and so on.
Well, I get that, but deficit spending is borrowing money that has to be paid back eventually through taxes.
Yeah, and I think...
Boy, so robust is her understanding of economics that she had to be corrected by an NPR reporter. Just a little bit more of a taste. You want the flavor?
I think that there's a lot of people more concerned about being precisely, factually, and semantically correct than about being morally right.
See, she's morally right, so she doesn't have to be economically sound in her thinking. She's morally correct, so she doesn't need to be precisely factual in what she says. And that turns out to work out super well for her.
But
do you think it is moral for individuals to, for instance, do we live in a moral world that allows for billionaires? Is that a moral outcome in and of itself?
No, see? She's morally correct, so she doesn't have to be technically accurate or factual inner explanations. I just wanted you to get a real feel, some layering to Ocasio-Cortez and her many pronouncements over the last several months, since she is the intellectual leader of the Democrat Socialist Party. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Steve Moore, Wall Street Journal columnist, chief economist for CNN. Steve, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Hi, guys. Good morning. And by the way, this is, just so you know, this is the whole millennial generation. I mean, this isn't just AOC. This is what the kids have been learning in school for, you know, for 40 years, and we're paying a high price for it. I mean, AOC is just regurgitating what her professors at Boston University and her high school economics professor, teachers have told her. And this is what we get for letting the left run the government schools for the last 50 years, this kind of economic gibberish. By the way, I loved one of her comments the other day. She was asked how she was going to pay for this, you know, $10 trillion, quote, transformation of the American economy. She said, well, you know, she said, the government is going to pay for it. And then she said, and if we still need more money, they'll just raise taxes.
Right, right. Yeah. Right. We're going to first
That's
use
good. Those are two good solutions.
First, we're going to use the government's money, and then if we need more, we're going to use other people's money. No, I mean this. Look,
exactly.
Steve.
By the way, where does she think the government's money comes
from? Of course,
from?
But Steve, she's morally right. And look, as Cory Booker said, did we ask about how much it was going to cost to put a man on the moon? Did we ask how much it was going to cost to defeat the Nazis? This is a moment in time to gather humanity together and volunteer for subjugation.
Well, I think that's right. And by the way, the left has always made the case that, you know, this was going to be, you know, we were going to have this green energy revolution, and then it was going to be good for us. It was going to be good for the economy. Now they're, you know, realizing, wait a minute, this is going to cost a whole hell of a lot of money. And incidentally, this is good for the American people. I mean, I think it's very educational for Americans to see how crazy, you know, these people are. I mean, the left is nuts. I mean, the ideas in the Green New Deal, I mean, everybody knows how crazy these are, 70% tax rates, and now we're going to do, you know, no plane travel. And by the way, I don't know, Dan or Amy, if you drove to work today, but, you know, if it wasn't considered an essential trip, you won't be able to do that anymore. You'll have to, you know, jump on a bus or a train, these right. kinds of things. I mean, we're going to get rid of health insurance, by the way, and everybody's going to be covered by Medicare, whether you like it or not. And what was most surprising to me about this whole thing, though, look, AOC, how old is she, 29?
Yeah.
29 years old. She doesn't know anything, right? I mean, I like her spunk and stuff, but she's not a very knowledgeable person. But what about all these Democratic presidential candidates who are standing right behind her?
Absolutely.
In solidarity.
Absolutely.
Well, I know. That's why. What do you think of Mitch McConnell taking it to the Senate floor to see
it.
Where people stand?
I mean,
stand.
Finally, Mitch McConnell showing a little bit of backbone. I love it. Yeah, I want to see if a single – by the way, my prediction is that vote – first of all, I think a lot of the Democrats are going to be afraid to show up. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of them don't show up for that vote. But I don't think it's going to get a single vote. Except Bernie Sanders. I think Bernie Sanders probably would vote for it.
Well, Murky, he's a co-sponsor.
Do you think Dick Durbin is going to vote for that? Or who's your other senator?
Tammy Duckworth. And Murky's a co-sponsor.
Yeah, well, she might vote for it, right?
Well, Murky from Massachusetts co-sponsor, he's going to vote for it. I mean, he's not going to vote for the resolution
the guy from,
sponsor.
There's a crazy guy from Rhode Island White House. Or,
yeah, Sheldon White House. Sure, there's lots of crazy
people. He's
kind
of a crazy. But, yeah. Look, I was just in Ohio last week. Ohio's economy is absolutely booming right now. And the major reason that it's booming is because of the shale oil and gas revolution. They're right there in the Marcellus Shale. We're producing more natural gas in Ohio than any place in the world. She wants to shut that all down. She wants to shut down natural gas production, and natural gas is actually reducing greenhouse gases. These people are so stupid. They also originally, remember, they said they wanted to get rid of all nuclear power.
Right.
If you want to solve the greenhouse gas problem, you want to use more nuclear power, not less. There's no greenhouse gases from nuclear power.
Right. I remember a time when the Sierra Club was considered left. Now the Sierra Club, which concedes the need for nuclear power, now they're out of step with where the Democrat Socialist Party, too. The Sierra Club can't get left enough.
Well, I mean, look, I love the example of what happened in Chicago. I see what's your temperature there today, about 15 degrees or something. But, you know, when it was 30 below, there was a story in Bloomberg. You guys live there, so you can tell me if this was true, that the solar panels and the windmills didn't work. So they had to go to old-fashioned coal to keep people from, you know, freezing to death, literally freezing to death. on those cold days, because guess what? When you most need energy, wind and solar power are least effective and least available. So, you know, you'd literally have a lot of people die. I mean, energy is the master resource, right? So everything that we have derives from cheap and reliable energy, and they're going right at the heart of our economy with these, you know, let me put it very simply. Does anybody in their right mind really believe that in our $20 trillion industrial economy, we're going to provide enough electric power and enough transportation fuel from batteries to power a $20 trillion economy? I mean, it's utter nonsense.
Going to another aspect of the heart of our economy, trade, and word out this morning that Trump is not inclined to extend the trade deadline he's imposed on China, more tariffs are triggered. Where do you think that stands? How does that play out?
So that means they've got what? I think it's March 1st, right, is the deadline.
Yeah.
So that means they've got just less than 3 weeks to come up with some kind of deal. I think Trump is playing a little bit of games, you know, brinksmanship here. But he is not, look, he is not bluffing that if China doesn't come forward with some kind of a deal that makes some concessions. And as you guys know, because we've argued about this on the show, I'm in favor of what Trump is doing with China. I think China is a really bad actor, and I think they need to be brought to heel. But if they don't make some kind of concessions here in terms of stopping the stealing of our intellectual property and reducing their barriers to Americans selling goods and services over there, I think Trump will go forward with that 25% tariff. It will hurt the U.S. economy. It'll destroy the Chinese economy. So I hope level heads prevail here. But you're dealing with the Beijing government. These guys are communists. Who knows what they're going to do?
All right. He is Steve Moore, Wall Street Journal columnist, CNN chief economist. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Okay, guys. Have a great week. No more driving.
Right. We'll see you next week. And you join us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
So, Amy, I understand that Proco Gropo Joe Moreno, part-time extortionist and police impersonator, is driving his opponent bananas.
Oh, hey, I see what you did there. Well, yeah, his opponent, who we've tried many times to get on this show, Daniel Espada, is on a little bit of hot water because there is a Facebook picture that he posted from his bachelor party in 2013 when he was a young 29 years old, and he's wearing a banana suit. And
of course,
the other guys in the group thought it would be cool to put on monkey masks, and then he, as the banana, chased the monkeys, or the monkeys were chasing the banana through Millennium Park.
Isn't that a Limp Bizkit video?
I mean, it's just bad, but it surfaced Tuesday, and then the problem is. Then when they were done chasing each other, you know, getting all silly there in Millennium Park, they decided to snap a photo with four African-American kids with the monkey faces people behind them and the banana. So a lot of people saying this is racist. He released a statement saying the photo
that
was,
I am announcing my candidacy for governor of Virginia.
The photo was taken during, quote, a goofy kind of fun activity that was part of his bachelor party. He said he's not a racist. But if elected alderman, he'll use his office to break down racial inequities
in our ward and city. Yeah. Here's the thing. The problem is not the banana suit and the monkey masks. The problem is that the entire group is a bunch of dorks. That's what they did for a bachelor party?
I know.
I mean,
that was their pregame. They went to a bar.
Come on. I'm sure it was intended to be racist. I'm sure they were looking for four black kids to take a picture with. So this thing surfaces.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just cut. You know, it's fun to have fun at his expense because, you know, he's a dork and a mope and probably one of the few people that can actually lose a race to Proco Gropo Joe Moreno, who should be arrested.
Right.
But
I was wondering. I was always wondering what the real reason was. Why isn't he coming on? So you should capitalize on this. You know, you should. You know, your opponent might be getting arrested soon.
Maybe he's.
And he didn't want to come on the show, and I think it's because of this. But you know, whatever.
Or maybe it's because.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because he is put up by Proco Joe. He's a fake candidate.
That's another possibility, too.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And as we await to see what I reported Monday.
Yeah, you had the scoop.
Turned into legislative form in Illinois because Governor Spaulding here wants to compete with Governors Northam and Cuomo for the most pro-infanticide governor in America. Understanding is legislation will be coming that would repeal parental notification for minors. And by the way, there's a judicial bypass in that parental notification stricture at present. So just in terms of what if you have bad parents, you can go to a judge. Repeal the late-term abortion ban, partial birth abortion ban. Allow for non-doctors to perform abortions. And also provide more forced funding through insurance company mandates for coverage. So we'll see. Here's what we don't have to see. We know Governor Rauner's abortions. Governor Rauner funded abortions. 1,561 public funded abortions for the first 6 months of 2018 after he signed House Bill 40. Public funding of abortion on demand all 9 months. 1,561 first 6 months of 2018. What was it the first 6 months of 2017 before that legislation was signed in terms of public policy impacting people's lives or their lack of having one? 85. 1,561 versus 85. That's the difference that legislation made, and that's just in the first 6 months of year one. Big difference. Youngest person to get an abortion? 12.
Ooh. Yeah.
Welcome to the gruesome reality on the ground. And this is why we talked to Abby Johnson yesterday in her new movie coming out about her autobiography, Unplanned, the end of March. Planned Parenthood clinic director to pro-life advocate. Here's another example of that. Dr. Anthony Levitino, who's an OBGYN and former abortionist. He sat down for an interview with Live Action's Lila Rose, pro-life organization. He talked about and addressed the arguments being made by the pro-infanticide left, by the Northams and the Cuomos and the Pritzkers and the Democrat ghouls in this state. You will hear these arguments. High-risk pregnancies, protecting women's health, protecting women's life. That's why you need to open up and legalize late-term abortions, right?
We hear all the time how abortion, including especially late-term abortion, is necessary to save women's lives. Nothing could be further from the truth. I spent 9 years working at a tertiary medical center. I mean, there are only certain hospitals in the country that are designated to take care of the really, really high-risk pregnancies. You don't want to duplicate the effort. It's expensive. So these hospitals get referrals from the surrounding area. And Albany Medical Center in Albany, New York, where I worked, was one of them. I was faculty at the hospital for 9 years. And I saw hundreds of cases of really severe pregnancy complications, cancers, heart disease, intractable diabetes out of control, toxemia of pregnancy out of control. And I saved, in those 9 years, I saved hundreds of women from life-threatening pregnancies. And I did that by delivering them, by ending their pregnancy by delivery, either induction of labor or cesarean section.
Delivering the baby.
Delivering the baby. And I always tell people, in all of those years, the number of babies that I was obligated to deliberately kill in the process was zero, none.
He goes on to explain what actually happens when a woman's health, life is in jeopardy late in her term.
The key point about late-term abortion that so many people miss is that it takes days to prepare the cervix. This is not a natural situation by any stretch. If you're going to dilate a cervix sufficiently, that starts off essentially as a pinpoint, large enough to dismember or tear apart a baby this big, that cervix has to be dilated, and that can take anywhere from 24 to 72 hours. And especially when you're talking about later term pregnancies. most life-threatening situations, the vast, vast majority of life-threatening situations in pregnancy are not going to arise until 24, 25, 26 weeks of pregnancy and higher. And when you're talking about that, you're talking about abortion procedures that take 2 and 3 days to prepare the cervix. And I'll give you a classic example. This is a real case. A lady came to the hospital at 27 weeks of pregnancy with severe toxemia. Her blood pressure, you know, a normal blood pressure is about 120 over 80. Her blood pressure was 220 over 160. Okay, this lady would literally be minutes or hours away from a stroke. What do you do in a situation like that? We stabilized her, brought her back, did a cesarean section, had her delivered within an hour of arriving at the hospital. She and her baby did just fine.
Amazing.
Now, let's say we wanted to use abortion to save her life, okay? If with that kind of blood pressure and that kind of problem, if we waited 2 to 3 days to get her cervix prepared, she would never make it. She would have been dead. And that's a perfect example. You never need late-term abortion to save a woman's life. If necessary, you accomplish the delivery. Now, did every one of those children make it because they were preterm? No. But they all had a chance, and most of them did make it.
The party of science, the left, the pro-infanticide left. There's the reality on the ground. The other reality on the ground in Illinois is that the pro-life side is not giving up because of what Rahner and Surrender Republicans have done, because of the political landscape dominated by pro-infanticide Democrats. Aid for Women, which is a Catholic life-affirming pregnancy center to which I'm affiliated on an advisory board, is opening up crisis pregnancy centers to serve women and children in the metro area, just as the political class's support for HB 40 that Rahner signed has allowed Planned Parenthood to open up new clinics, new abortion mills in Illinois, even as they're closing them in many parts of the rest of the country. And for more on the work of Aid for Women, what's happening locally, we're pleased to be joined by Pastor Cesar LaFleur, who is also the founder of the Southland Coalition for Life. Cesar, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan. Good morning.
Morning. And so against this very difficult landscape and what additional difficulties could be in the offing, tell us what Aid for Women is doing and how people can to intercede with Aid for Women in advance of life in Chicago Metro.
Absolutely, and thank you so much for the opportunity. You know, unfortunately, Illinois is surging ahead and it's a race to the bottom when it comes down to our total disrespect for the sanctity of innocent human life. And as you mentioned, in other states, we're seeing a reduction in abortion providers. Illinois, because of the political climate here, because of our liberal policies and a governor that failed us by signing legislation that makes abortion more accessible. Organizations like Planned Parenthood have targeted Illinois, as they did when they opened up the center in Flossmoor, Illinois, under the cover of darkness almost. And they have plans for opening up 4 more of the centers, we understand, in Illinois, because Illinois now has become a state that's becoming an oasis, if you will, in the Midwest for abortion. And so we didn't want to just sit by and just go along with that. We wanted to respond to this darkness by opening up a light in our area in Flossmoor. When we found out about Planned Parenthood, when they opened up on Martin Luther King Day in Flossmoor, a group of us got together and we prayed and we decided that we wanted to have a response. And so we formulated the Southland Coalition for Life. And we came together, Dan, for these purposes, to provide resources that would support, love, and empower women to make life-affirming decisions, to not just go along with the prevailing opinion about life is not sacred, but to give them opportunities to be supported so that they can make a decision for life. And that's why we are working with Aid for Women to open up the Flossmoor Women's Pregnancy Aid Center. And people can find out more how to support us, because we really need your support. God did something miraculous, but in a very short period of time, he made the resources available to us through very loving and caring people to open up our center, which is opening up this month. But we are looking for sustainability. We want to be there for the long haul so that these women can have access to this vitally needed support in that area. So we're encouraging your listeners to go to helpaidforwomen.org helpaidforwomen.org so they can find out how to support this ongoing work. Our Pregnancy Help Center is going to be right in the area where the Planned Parenthood is, because we want to be present with light where darkness is. And we understand that the darkness cannot overcome light. We also wanted to provide educational opportunities for the people in our community so that they can be informed about things about abortion that they might not know. For instance, abortion's disproportionate effect on African-Americans. African-Americans, women only represent 6% of the population, but have almost 30 to 40% of the abortions, and that's on purpose, because Planned Parenthood and organizations like that place their centers deliberately in black and brown areas.
And that, and so Caesar, not to interrupt, but and that's what they did, and that's what they did by citing that facility in Flossmoor, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's very strategic, and they knew the areas they would be drawing from, not only in Illinois, but also in Indiana. And they do that as a matter of strategy. Roseland, Inglewood, and other places where minority groups are. We did some studies years ago that said almost 80% of their facilities are within walking distance of black communities. And so this is what they did consistent with that in Flossmoor. So we wanted to educate the public about that. And also we wanted to build a network of prayer intercessors to be able to pray for a spiritual awakening in our nation that would turn our hearts back to the sanctity of life. And so the Southland Coalition is a grassroots organization, a very diverse organization, blacks, whites, browns, and other people that were concerned about life. And we came together, and in a very short period of time, God has allowed us to be able to be at this point where we're about to open up our own women's pregnancy aid center.
Now, Pastor, I know your mission is to empower women to choose life. How do you find or go about reaching out to the women who are pregnant?
Well, in several ways. First of all, the Internet is going to be a great help to us in that, because women are looking for answers. They're looking for solutions. So we do want to be very prominent, very present on the Internet and promoting it, but also through other vehicles, like talking on your radio program this morning. Women need to know that there are other options. And so we're going to use all of the resources available to us through the media and through our emails and Internet, any way that we can get the word out. Billboards, word of mouth. We want women to know that there are different options.
And it's interesting, too, just noting that you're opening, Aid for Women is opening this pregnancy center in Flossmoor, because as I understand it, the money was raised locally. And so there was enough money raised locally. I mean, Flossmoor used to be a wealthy community. Some people might remember it as such.
Oh, yeah.
But now it's decidedly a middle income community and some places at best. And so to have money raised sufficient to open up this pregnancy center locally has to be a point of encouragement.
Absolutely, it is. You know, there were so many people, individual donors and other groups that showed up and they gave. And it's almost miraculous that we're able to open up this short of time. But once again, our concern is sustainability, because we want to be there for the long term, which is why we are highly encouraging people to support us in those two ways, to pray for us, and then definitely go to helpaidforwomen.org and become a regular supporter, because this is what it's going to take. It's going to take people with a heart to be not only involved and active, but to support the work that needs to go forward. We know that we can't compete with the government, and we know how Planned Parenthood and others, how they're funded, you know, but we need people to rise up at this opportunity and support us in this effort.
And just talk a little bit about the work that you've done. I mean, you've been involved in the cause of life for a long time. For those of you who don't know, for those that are listening to us who don't know Pastor LaFleur, in the black community specifically, but in Chicagoland generally. Just talk about where you think this is, this issue and the fight for preserving the dignity of human life from conception to natural death.
Absolutely. Thanks, Dan, for this opportunity. I tell people all the time, I didn't choose to be active in the abortion issue. God used this issue to choose me. And once he awakened my heart about it, I really became alarmed when I found out the truth about what was happening, and especially when I found out what was happening in the black community. So I was working with a pastor, Hiram Crawford Sr., who I'm sure you know, who was a pioneer in the black community, and trying to awaken the black community about what was targeted towards us. I became involved with the African American Family Association, and not long after that, I discovered the Life Education and Resource Network, which is a national organization of black pro-life, pro-family workers. And so I have been working to try to educate, to mobilize the black church to rise up against this issue of abortion, because I'm trying to show them that this is a spiritual issue. And it's something that the black church is really going to have to awaken to, because black people are the target of abortion. And I believe that the black church can be the answer to it. Because I've often said that if the black church would awaken and rise up and lift up our voice against abortion, then I think this nation would pay attention, just as Martin Luther King did in doing the civil rights movement. I believe that this is our opportunity now to do that, and I think it's necessary. So that's where I have been focusing my energies for the last several years, is trying to reach the black community and especially the black church, to inform them and to inspire them to take a different position, because we know just because abortion is justified in the eyes of the law does not mean that it's justified in the eyes of God. And it is wicked and it is evil. It is the evil of our day, just as slavery was an evil in our past. And this is our critical moment. And that's why I'm so excited about what God is doing through people of faith, even through the Southland Coalition for Life, to inspire us to not just sit back and curse the darkness, but to, through him, turn on the light. And that's what centers like the Aid for Women Center in Flossmoor is going to be. It's going to be a light in the midst of darkness. And that's where my energies go.
We don't get courage from the political class, either party in this state, but we do have people like Pastor Cesar LaFleur who are courageous day in and day out in advance of issues of concern and dignity like the life issue. And we should be thankful for it. Help Aid for Women .org, helpaidforwomen.org if you want to support the cause or even specifically their new pregnancy care center in Flossmoor that Pastor LaFleur is talking about. Pastor LaFleur, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan, always great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
By the way, nice use of the word ancillary.
Oh, can we put that on a magnet? Words with Amy?
On AM 560.
Your magnet will be Word with Amy.
The Answer.
So mean. If you want Words with Prof, if you want to play along at home, go to 560theanswer.com/wordswithprof. And we're going to get my magnet, Word with Amy.
Sure, it's a complimentary magnet. It's like a sidecar magnet. Word with Amy. All right, we're going to have some words with the Benham Brothers. You remember them. Not that they've gone anywhere, but they had this really popular show on HGTV, Flip It Forward, right? They helped home shows where they're helping people buy homes they can't afford or renovate their homes and so on and so forth. I don't really watch. I outsource all that stuff, so I'm not so keen on all those reality TV shows. But I know it was popular, and then it became the center of controversy because the Benham Brothers are Christians, and they had, spoken on issues that are in the political realm, but also the spiritual realm as adults. And, of course, some in the D.C. press corps in Hollywood didn't like what they had to say because it didn't conform to the anti-Christian orthodoxy of those institutions. And so their show got canceled. Well, they've got a new book out that in part tackles that, but also bigger issues than just their professional careers, because they are two men who live their faith. The book, Bold and Broken, Becoming the Bridge Between Heaven and Earth. Pleased to be joined by David and Jason Benham. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
So why don't we just start with kind of maybe, I don't want to relive a painful part of your past, but I do a little bit. Why don't we start with what happened with your popular show on HGTV and sort of the lessons you guys took away from that?
Absolutely. It's actually not painful. It's just part of God's story written into our lives as a testimony. And this is David speaking. I'm the older brother, and I'm a heck of a lot smarter than my brother Jason.
Sure. Well, then you should speak first. Yes.
We got out of pro baseball and became real estate entrepreneurs. By God's grace, we applied biblical principles into the marketplace. 7 years into business, we had 100 offices across 35 states. HGTV and TLC both came to us with offers for a reality show. We decided to sign with HGTV. It was great. They knew everything about us. We let them know very clearly that not only are we believers, but we also speak to what we believe are the two major moral issues of our time, not just political issues. These are gospel, spiritual, moral issues, which would be marriage and the sanctity of human life. And so we said, we speak to these things. And they said, that's great. It's okay. You're right. You're entitled to your opinions. The show's not going to be about that. It'll be about flipping. So They called the show Flip It Forward. We began airing commercials, and just before the first episode aired, Right Wing Watch and a few other of these, they call themselves news sources, but publications from the radical left, wrote a narrative about my brother and I that really just took things completely out of context. Of course, we became, instead of successful Christian entrepreneurs, we were haters, bigots, whatever-a-phobes. And at that point, they started putting pressure on HGTV. So HG called us, three of the executives, and literally with tears, they were crying. They said, we can't believe this is happening to you and your brother, but we're going to cancel this show.
So it never even, an episode never hit the air at
HGTV? No, it just before the premiere, they canceled it. We had six 1-hour episodes already done.
But so you guys,
how do you process that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's so evil and it's so destructive. How do you keep your faith?
Well, number one, we trust that in Romans 8:28, as we've read scripture, we've known the Lord since we were 12, and so we were reading the Bible. Romans 8:28 says, and we know that all things work together for good to those that love God and are called according to his purpose. So we know that all things, not just the good things, but even some of the difficult things, some of the hard things to handle, are going to work for God's glory. And we realize at that moment that, you know, we're at a pivotal time in our nation's history where the moral laws that govern the universe are now being, they're being assaulted. And we have to ask ourselves, are we willing to stand up for what we believe? And so we wrote a book called Whatever the Cost. It turned out to become a bestseller. And the next thing you know, Jason, I didn't realize we like to write. We're authors. And so especially now with this next book that came out, Bold and Broken, Becoming a Bridge Between Heaven and Earth, how it's really important for us as believers to speak with boldness, but to do it upon the foundation of brokenness, which means submitted to God in a spirit of humility. And so this is how we want to engage the culture. We want to speak and shine the light of God's word this direction.
And so, I mean, you know, you guys start out, you're the popular entrepreneurs. There's a lot of anticipation about this show, sort of a popular topic area for shows. And maybe a lot of people didn't know about your faith. And now it's more about your faith than your real estate entrepreneurship. And I just wonder, you know, how that's transitioned in terms of who your audience is. And what your goal is? Is the goal to help the choir sing better, or is it to reach those who are otherwise, treat people who disagree with them coming from a base of Christianity as haters, as you said?
Well, that's a great question. And David and I would definitely say our goal is to be salt and light, which is, you know, light is a revealer of who God is. We're still in the marketplace. We still, run our real estate company. We had built our real estate company to 100 offices in 35 states. So we're mixed in with the world. And yet we really do believe that God has called us to awaken Christians and to strengthen them so that they don't have to focus on perception and how we're perceived. I mean, when you stand for God's truth today, if you were to say something as simple as, you know, God defines marriage between a man and a woman. And if you say that, and let's say you post that on Facebook, well, you're probably going to get a lot of people falsely accusing you as being a bigot or a hater or whatever. And those are all false accusations. And that puts you in the realm of what Jesus says in Matthew 5, that blessed are you when people persecute you and falsely accuse you, which means that when you stand for God's truth and people believe something about you that's not true, you're actually blessed. So our message is to Christians, but yet we're still running our businesses. We're still operating all the stuff that we're doing in the marketplace. And so we're just trying to be as salty as we can.
Yeah, well, I like that, be as salty as we can. And I think the thing that's inspired about this, too, I mean, places like Chicago, you know, that are run like Banana Republics, a lot of people, I feel like they have to play the game and they can't live out their faith in their professional pursuits. And you make compromises and you make little ones and then you make big ones. And I've done it. And upon reflection, I wouldn't have done it the way I did it previously. But it's easy to fall into that trap. And so it's good to have successful models of people living their faith and being successful in the secular temporal world as well.
Sure. You know, it's interesting, and this is David speaking. It's interesting. In our book, Bold and Broken, we write a chapter about what happened behind the scenes with HGTV just a few weeks, or actually it was a few months before we got fired. And my brother and I were really afraid. And to be honest, we actually made some compromises. And so you got to read that chapter, and obviously we believe the book is great, but that particular chapter will really encourage folks that have compromised in the past or really struggling with it even now, saying, I'm afraid, I don't want to speak. Well, we know that feeling, but then God helped walk us through that, and the Holy Spirit began to fill us with boldness. We recognized the fear of man and a man-pleasing spirit on us, and we said, you know what? First and foremost, we as Christians in the marketplace are to do good works. That's Matthew 5:16. We do good works. So if you're in real estate, you're flipping houses or buy and hold rent, or you're an architect or you're a radio host or you're a stay-at-home mom, whatever it is, we need to be the best at it. At the same time, when it comes to God's laws and the principles of God that lead to his blessings, we don't need to shrink back from speaking what we believe the truth to be. So a man dies, MLK said, Martin Luther King Jr. said, a man dies when he refuses to stand up for what's right. But that doesn't mean you're not going to have fear. So we talk all about that in this book.
Okay. And then how did your relationship with God begin? I mean, were you guys always devout Christians?
Well, our dad was a pastor. And okay. So, you know, it's one of those PK things where you think, oh, well, we're supposed to be Christians. But when both of us were 12, at different points of our lives at 12, we gave our hearts to Jesus. And then our dad just basically gave us a simple challenge. He said, all right, boys, since you've started this relationship with Jesus, you need to get into the scripture every single day. And so we made a commitment to read through the New Testament every year. Mm-hmm. So from the time we were 12 to the time we were 18, we read through the New Testament every year. So we got through it 6 times. And then by the time we left for college to play baseball at Liberty University, we started reading through the Bible cover to cover every year, and now we're 43, so we've been through the Bible 25 times, and it doesn't mean that we're uber spiritual. It just means that we're filling ourselves up every single day with that scripture, and God has brought us through the ups and downs, and man, I would just love to unleash on my brother and give you guys all the gory details of the stuff he did that was stupid, and but it's been a great time with the Lord. And we're just really thankful that God uses weak and broken people like us.
It's Shakespeare in Julius Caesar. A coward dies 1,000 times before his death, but the valiant takes death but once. The Benham brothers, valiant in pursuit of professional success as well as living out their faith, and probably in reverse order of priority than I said them. David and Jason Benham, the book, Bold and Broken, Becoming the Bridge Between Heaven and Earth. Check it out. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck with the book. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
And they joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's morning answer on AM 560. The answer.
Okay, you can chalk this up in the gross column. Amy Klobuchar, you know, there's rumors that she was difficult with her staff members, that she was, you know, a horrible boss. That's what somebody said, that she's earned that reputation. You know what she would do?
That's been the reporting on her prior to her announcement for president and since.
Oh, yeah. She was rated one of the worst bosses to work for in Congress. But we're getting more information about what she would make them do. Personal errands, such as picking up her dry cleaning, mm-hmm. packing her suitcase for travel. But ready for this? Cleaning and washing her dishes at her house. Really? And that's not the worst part.
That, by the way, that's also arguably a violation of campaign finance law. When you use public employees for personal business.
Yeah, according to staffers, the overly critical senator would sometimes turn a single mistake into a multi-day affair. Like, she couldn't let things go, and she would shame people and demean them, followed by, you know, post-work angry late-night phone calls and emails in all caps. Which we love so much. She was on with Brett Baer.
So do you have the temperament to be president?
I do. I think I showed that during the Kavanaugh hearings, and I have showed that through my life in terms of how I dealt with adversity in my personal life, growing up with my dad with a pretty severe drinking problem. He's doing well now at age 90, life I lead now.
And that's the elevator pitch?
Oh, my elevator pitch? No. My elevator pitch is I've had it with governing from chaos. We need to...
Blah, blah, blah. You know where that went.
So because her dad was an alcoholic, it's okay for her to be...
To have anger issues, really?
To be nasty to subordinates. And also, I mean, again, I love this idea that she's using staff for work at her home. Boy, I'd hate to see another senator dragged out of the chamber in cuffs.
High expectations for herself, high expectations for the people who work for me, high expectations for this country. Mm-hmm. But the worst part is...
So she's going to yell at us? If she's president, she's going to yell at us and she's going to deliver speeches in all caps?
She reminds me of Rahm Emanuel. I mean, really, because he has temper tantrums and yells at his staff and... That's what I've been told.
She's a little bigger. She's taller than
But also, listen to this. This is the worst part, I think, too. Hmm. If one of her staffers is going to leave, if she's hearing rumblings of it, she'll try and find out where they've applied and sabotage that. And if they got a job offer, she'll call that employer and say, you should rescind this for anyone who's trying to jump ship on her.
Great boss.
I mean, that's a control freak. And then there's a rumor going around. Uh-huh. But this is, I don't know if it's true. But the Veep writers, they take trips to Washington, D.C., so they hear these rumors.
Sure.
That she had one of her staffers shave her legs for her.
Cory Booker.
That's the sound. So I brought a razor in. I was just wondering which one of you cats want to shave my legs today.
Disgusting.
We have a few minutes left in the show. Dan, are you in?
Sean from Elmwood Park is in the booth.
Sean,
raising
you
his hand.
My leg?
That's disgusting.
Sean's got a bottle of Nair, so that'll take care of the
hair. Won't be the first 6-foot blonde I had to deal with leg hair.
Oh my. Yeah. What was his name?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.